Welcome to Out With Dan, the podcast that spotlights and examines the voices of LGBTQ+ authors, characters, and our allies. Together, we lift our voices and we tell our stories. I'm Dan White. Join me as I chat with this week's author. Hello, and welcome back to Out With Dan. Today, I'm excited to talk to Jerry Westerson about The Twilight Queen. Welcome, Jerry.
Well, thank you for having me on this February 29th. It's yes. The mystical day. It's the Brigadoon of days.
It is, and if only we'd been born on this day, I'd be a lot younger than I am currently.
Yeah, we're going to disappear at midnight, so I don't know what's happening with that.
Precisely. So I did mention before we started recording, I do want to highlight that you have a new kitty in your home.
Yes.
Are you happy? Mm-hmm. What is Kitty's name?
Her name is Chloe. She's a shelter cat. She's a trauma cat. She's had some trauma in her life. And so she disappears a lot, but she's learning slowly that it's okay to be in the room with us. And if we stand up, it's still okay to be in the room. So she's had a lot. It's not a lot of something happening to her.
Well, so. Bless you and Craig for adopting a shelter cat because they need love just like any other cat does.
They need more love. So, yeah, she's a cutie.
Yes. And it must take patience as well. So, congratulations to both of you.
It's something I usually don't have either, but you know, there's fur, there's purring. So, you know, it's nice.
That helps. That does help. So let's get into talking about A King's Fool, the new one out. This is The Twilight Queen, and it's the second in the series.
And
I love the setting.
This is the first.
Courting
Dragons. Courting
Dragons. I love that. And now we have The Twilight Queen. Mm-hmm. Was Anne Boleyn known as The Twilight Queen, or is that just the name of your book?
It's just something that I came up with because she's in the twilight of, as soon as she becomes queen, she's kind of in the twilight there. And she's just not going to last long. So, it seemed like an apt title.
I think it is an apt title. So this period is a period I've loved since I was in high school. I did a lot of term papers on Catherine of Aragon and her parents, Ferdinand and Isabella. And so I feel like I was sort of back into my home territory, even though I live in today's world, but I enjoyed the setting. I know that a lot of your books take place in the past. Mm-hmm. And so is this particular era something that's overly important to you, or is it a favorite of yours?
I like you, was sort of a history nerd. And so, and raised by rabid Anglophiles. So I knew all about the kings and queens of England. I mean, that was dinner table conversation, you know?
Oh, nice.
So, yeah. So you had to know it or you'd be left behind. And there were books at home, you know, books on the shelves at home that you just dragged down all these historical novels. It was great. So, the Tudor period, Henry VIII, was something always there in the back of my mind. And I loved, in the 70s, the Keith Michelle series, the Henry VIII, The Six Wives of Henry VIII, the best depiction so far, historically accurate and all. All the rest of them, not so much. But I was that crazy a child that I knew about Will Summers. Just because I did. Will Summers is the real court jester of Henry VIII. And I thought when I finished my Crispin Guest medieval noir series, I needed something else to fill that gap. And I thought, you know, everybody loves the Tudors. Somehow they know something about Henry VIII and Anne Boleyn. She's behind me over there. And this might help fill that gap. And I wanted a different take. There's been so many, and there are continues to be so many novels about the Tudors, Henry's period, that I gotta find a different way to tell the story. And so I thought, writing a mystery, that Will Summers would be a very unique detective because he's everywhere. He's everywhere at court and beloved and lasted through all of Henry's reign, through Edward the Sixth, through Mary the First, and retired into Elizabeth's reign. So everybody liked him. So it's a good way for someone to be able to do some detecting period, you know, appropriately, I guess. So
I will pat you on the back, Jerry. Not that you need it from me, but I will tell you that you did something wonderful because you gave us a different point of view. And I think that's very crafty on your part as an author, that here we know a story that, as you say, we've seen in depicted on television and in books and in movies of Henry VIII and his wives and that period. But now we see it from a different point of view, which is Will Summers. And I do know, because I'm a bit of a goofball myself, that when you are a humorist, and I know you're funny as well, because I've met you in person many times, there are a lot of things we can get away with humor that you may not be able to get away with if you were a stuffed shirt. So I like the fact that we see somebody who's both humorous, but he also, Will is very determined and he's very, very loyal, which will you talk about that a little bit, how you came to that type of loyalty?
Yeah. Well, you know, we have to get into the mindset of people in that time period. And it's difficult for some people to get over that. Some have mentioned that, you know, that relationship is a little to like master and slave. And I go, no, because in the master and slave period of the United States, you know, the slave really didn't care for the master. He had to pretend he did. But Will, in this time frame, the king is all important, and he takes Will into his life. At, you know, he was a young man, probably in his early 20s. We're not sure. But and then that's the rest of his life. That's his family. And, you know, Henry was married to Aunt Catherine of Aragon for 24 years. So he had a perfectly happy married life. As it was mentioned by others of the time period, there was a festival every day. They loved each other and they had a good time. And Will was part of that family because he was always close, had to be close to Henry. That was his job. And so they seem to all like him. And you know, Princess Mary loved him, and Princess Elizabeth loved him, and Edward, I'm sure, loved him. So he was an intimate part of their family, and he could jest and joke and do all that stuff with all of them. And that was he's Henry's almost his conscience in a way. He tries to be. But he sees him as someone it's his mission to help. And he can't stop Henry from doing things that just break his heart. But he has to try and change him. He has to try and get the sense into him. And he can do it through humor and through the intimacy that they've had over all these years. And I love the more touching scenes with just him and Henry alone. And to me, that's them. That's what they were really like. And, you know, that's what I want to get across, that we're looking through his eyes. We're feeling the way he feels. And we're sort of taking down the notion of Henry VIII as tyrant a little bit by seeing it through somebody who cares.
And I like that, Jerry. You know, you mentioned the fact that he's a bit of a conscience for Henry, and that's a great thing. You know, there's one point in the book where Will says that, you know, he knows Henry shouldn't be doing these dalliances outside of his marriage. And then he says, and who am I to throw a stone? Because Will Summers is married to Marion. And I love the fact that you've given them such a loving relationship. Mm-hmm. And Will also has dalliances with other men. Mm-hmm. And you write both directions of Will so lovingly and kindly that you don't write them with judgment. You write them with honesty. And I commend you for that, because as a reader, that's very important to me. I want I want to be able to form my own opinion about your characters. And you don't tell me how to feel. You show me. And I like that.
Yeah, that's well, hopefully. Yeah, that's what we do. But yeah, Will.
Well, that's what I have to say. Sorry, Jerry, to interrupt you. No. That's what good writers do, but not all writers do. That, so.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Will must have been. Now, we don't know if he was bisexual or not. We don't know if he was, if he wasn't. We don't know anything like that, because that would never have been told. And he never would have been staying in his position if that was true and that was known. And as a matter of fact, well, when I was developing the idea of this and then developing the character of Will Summers, because we just don't know that much about him, there are two kinds of fools. There's the witty sort that we think of Will as, and then there's what they call the natural fool, which are people who have mental disabilities. And that, I know, strikes people as uncomfortable, but the fact that they were there at court and cared for, they weren't being made fun of, and that's the big thing. They had these mentally challenged fools at court because these people were thought to be guileless. They were not going to scheme. They were not going to do anything cruel. They were just simply so happy to be there and having fun that people liked that. But the impression I get about Will Summers from writings about him from many other sources, and including him in plays and things like that, he was of the witty sort. So that's what I chose to do. But when I was thinking about the character himself, I knew that he was higher in admiration than most others at court. For one, he's not wearing motley. He's not wearing the party-colored clothes of a fool. He's not wearing the hood or bells or anything. In any of the paintings, yes, and he was in paintings of the time. So he had to be more special that they didn't insist that he look so different. So my idea instantly came to me. I'm going to make him bisexual because I think that he's just bigger all around. He's got a bigger heart. He's got a bigger mind. He's just bigger. And it just seemed right to me. And that's what I did. He'd never had a wife. so that's fiction too. So, but these things add conflict, of course, and more drama and all those other things. But it's sort of my agenda these days, you can call it that, that I want diversity in my books. And possibly especially in my historical books, because it wasn't invented in the 21st century. The spectrum of gender and, you know, that was not invented. And
it's been around forever.
Yeah, and I want people to know that. And the struggles they had. They had no vocabulary for the what we have now. But they knew what they knew, and they did their best. You know, in my Crispin Guest series, there is a fellow who is a cross-dressing prostitute, and he is a real person. He may be the first trans person in European mentioned in European history. His name is John Reichener. And he's mentioned in one document about his arrest. Now, he liked to dress as a woman, and he worked as, I'm going to say she worked as an embroideress, and she liked to be called Eleanor. Okay. But she also worked as a prostitute, and she serviced priests and nuns, and because she said all of this stuff, and everyday men folk. But she was arrested not for prostitution and not for sodomy or anything like that. She was arrested for dressing as a woman. That was a big no-no. You could not dress as the other gender. That was, you know. So he complained. What he did was he stole a gown from one of his clients. And that's sort of why he was arrested this time. And he complained. He said in the complaint, "I'm going to get my husband. I'm going to sick him on you if you don't leave me alone." So she lived with a man as her husband. And later in the books, the series, I added my own fictional husband to that. So, I mean, that was something I could have. I mean, he was a real guy. So I put him in there. And in Courting Dragons, I wanted that as well. And in the Sherlockian series that I'm writing, in a regular detective mystery, one of the protagonists is a Black man. This is in 1895. And I don't know why people say to me, "So why did you add a Black man in the story?" It's like, well, they were there.
So, right, you know, precisely. Turns out we've all existed a long time. You know,
people just showed up one day, and you know, that was I mean, you know, because I'm sort of correcting Doyle's error of leaving people of color out except for the exotic villain, you know.
Right, so, right.
You know, it's strange that I have to explain that. But there
I agree. I agree with you that it's strange. But, you know, in this world of trying to be inclusive, it turns out that those who are trying to be inclusive constantly have to explain why. And I'm like, I always want to turn it around on people and say, and why not?
Yeah. Why are we missing?
We're all human. Mm-hmm. Some of us are, you know, better humans than others. I'm just going to put that out there. But we're all human one way or another.
Yep. And, you know, so, it's what makes life interesting when people precisely. Are not all the same. So,
well, and if they were, if everyone was like me, I'd be bored out of my mind because I already know me, right? You know, so you have,
you've too much fun. That's the problem.
We do. That's why I'm a goofball, and that's why I get away with a lot of things in my life, because I am a goofball. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that I just loved about Will Summers. I was just like, this is just too stinking cute. So you signed
up. It's first person, so you know, you really do get that point of view in there. And
you do.
And you have to have, and all those medieval jokes. Now I found a lot of medieval jokes. But I did make up some of my own as well. And so you can have fun trying to figure out which is which. But they're silly. And, you know, some medieval jokes I found, I thought, well, I can't use these. There's nothing funny about them. I mean, sense of humor has changed a little, I guess, you know. But,
it has. It has indeed. So you've signed a contract for the third one in this series. Is that correct?
Right. The third one. It's so sort of called at this point Rebellious Grace. And each book, there's going to be six books in the series, one for each wife. Doesn't necessarily focus on any particular thing, but they're there, and inevitably it has something to do with their reign. So in that one, it's about the Pilgrimage of Grace. There was a rebellion in the north that was marching towards London. And they wanted their old religion back. They wanted the monasteries restored. They wanted the monks and nuns put back in them. They wanted their Catholicism back. And they wanted Princess Mary, who at this point is just called Lady Mary, back into the line of succession. So there's that. Yeah,
that's a very interesting period in that whole reign in my I really enjoy reading about that.
Yeah, I'm a there's big, so Mary much Queen going on. And I'm not a political. I don't like really reading and learning about and researching about politics, but you can't escape it in the reign of Henry VIII. And so that's another function of the point of view of Will Summers is that he is summarizing. He's he's making it all this complicated stuff simple. Simpler for the reader to understand without, you know,
which
really
is Which is nice because, unfortunately, we sort of have to do that with today's politics as well. It takes me a while to break down a bunch of stuff because I'm not, you know, and I don't listen to any talking heads. I try to read for myself to figure out what's going on because everyone has an agenda.
They sure do.
Lori, do you have a website or social media you'd like to share?
My website is jerriwesterson.com, J-E-R-I. And you can find all kinds of things there. Plus, you can find my social media contacts. I have a YouTube channel. So I have a bunch of fun videos on there, including book trailers. You might want to check those out.
Lovely. Oh, I will. I definitely will. I have not seen those. So I also know that Counting Dragons.
Courting Dragons.
Sorry. I somehow thought I had goofed that. Sorry, Courting Dragons is now out on audio. Is that correct?
It is coming out on audio on March 5th, and it's wonderful stuff.
Lovely. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. Congratulations, Jerri, and thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
This has been fun. Let's do it again.
Yes, absolutely.
Perfect. Hang on for me just a second.
Thank you for joining me for this week's episode of Out with Dan. You can find more information about this podcast and its host at outwithdan.com, on Twitter at @outwithdan, and on Instagram and Facebook at @GoOutWithDan. This podcast is hosted by Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, and the theme music is provided by bensound.com. Join us again soon for the next episode of Out with Dan.